Welcome to Good Muslim, Bad Muslim.
How you doing, Taz?
I have allergies.
We both sound a little bit like this.
Yeah, we're kind of nasally. We have allergies because it is fall.
In Los Angeles, this means allergies. Because otherwise, fall in Los Angeles is not a season.
Yeah, I always forget that we do actually have seasons in L.A. And in L.A., it got chilly last night. We needed extra blankets and...
I had to wear a scarf.
Right? Now it's time to get out the boots. And so, yes, we do have seasons in L.A.
Okay, but also by chilly, you mean like... It was 78 degrees.
Yeah. No, it was probably like 71.
It felt like, 71.
Yeah. It was an extra blanket weather.
You know what? I'm tired of this fake news coming from you about warming.
Global warming. Take us back to Hawaii, man.
I miss the pokey.
Oh, I miss the pokey. I miss the heat. I miss just the air.
You know what I thought I wouldn't miss that I kind of do?
What? The cockroaches?
Yeah.
You miss the cockroaches?
Kind of a little bit.
You miss the wildlife?
Well, you know what? The cockroaches kept me from going into the kitchen at night.
Mmm.
Yeah, cockroaches in the kitchen.
What would happen with the cockroaches in the kitchen?
I would run away from the refrigerator.
That's so funny. So you were able to, like, not eat.
Yeah. Well, and the cockroaches would come out, and then we would stay away from the kitchen at nighttime, which, like, you know. Women use lots of different things as dietary aids.
Yeah.
Some women in the 60s used tapeworms.
Hey, I sometimes see cockroaches in my kitchen, so I can capture them and gift them to you to help out with your dietary needs. So gross. Yeah, so we're back from Shangri-La. We were there for an awesome 10 days. It, like, feels really surreal to me. Like, I can't believe we had that opportunity. And we were in Hawaii, and we lived in a museum, and...
We lived in a museum for a little while.
Like, what? If you haven't listened, go listen to our last episode. It was... I've been trying to write about it. I've honestly been sitting and I have all these notes and I just wanted to write about the experience and I haven't been able to write about it. And I was talking to a friend about how we were in Doris Duke's Oriental Fantasy, right? This was her place where she collected the items of our people and turned it into her luxury house. And then it got turned into a museum. My friend was like, well, yeah, you're probably still experiencing a lot of trauma from the experience too. And I was like, yeah, that's true. Like being in an Orientalist place as a Muslim and as a South Asian, there is an element of trauma in that. Like, there's an element of othering and being racialized and being hyper.
Well, and we also, like, it wasn't all beaches and waves. Like, we went to Hanauliuli.
Yeah.
The internment camp.
Yeah, and I
that was intense.
I just felt the focus of who we were magnified in that space. So I think I'm working through a little bit of that, too, right now.
For me, it's like the opposite.
With what?
I'm dealing with the trauma of regular life. I felt very at home there.
You're like, oh, my things.
Yeah, it was like, this is where I'm meant to be, is in some version of the Isfahan Square in a millionaire's mansion by the beach.
Yeah, and being taken care of by an awesome staff, which was also really nice.
Oh, yeah, being taken care of.
I was like, oh, okay, this is great. Having security. Oh, this is awesome.
So right now, is it appropriating for me, Tess, to say I feel like a single woman?
Yeah. As a single woman, yes.
I feel like your struggle, though, I think.
Nope.
I think so because, like, I'm long distance right now.
Not what you were doing last night.
Oh, dang. Diving on in. I have no shame.
No, you shouldn't because you're a married woman.
I'm a married woman.
And you are allowed to do things with your husband.
In a parking lot.
I didn't say that. It was all you.
I did. I did because I have no shame.
Well, there you go.
We have a lot to talk about.
We do. We have a lot to talk about.
Not just sexy parking lots.
Nope.
We've got the Emmys. To touch on, of course, the new iteration of the Muslim ban.
Yep.
And, oh, genocide.
Genocide, great.
Oh, just that.
We have I was looking through our agenda. It's a very pop culture agenda today. We have a lot of
TV
to talk about.
Is it because we're both just like escaping as much as possible?
You know, I was thinking about this. I actually do watch a lot of television. I didn't realize this until I was talking to other people, but I watch a lot of TV. And before I was kind of keeping it on down low, but no, I'm going to embrace it. I watch a lot of television and I'm okay with it.
I'm proud of you.
Thank you. Hmm. But before we talk about TV... I want to talk about the Muslim ban that's coming up. So the Muslim ban is being heard by the Supreme Court on October 10th. And they're saying that it's probably going to take about 3 days. I think they're going to hear it on the 10th and the 11th. On the 12th day, they're going to go behind, do a closed session. And there's a bunch of events that are happening leading up to it because we want to drum up excitement, media, and get people to remember that this was something that happened. So if you would like to participate, throw an event yourself. Go to nomuslimbanever.com. There's a bunch of resources there. We at 18 Million Rising will be doing a poetry series that starts on October 1st, and we'll be working with Asian American poets to share out different poems by well-known poets on No Muslim Ban Ever, and do what you can to bring this news to your community.
Guess where I'll be?
Where will you be?
In China.
Do what you can in China. It's going to be really interesting for you to be in China because this might affect what happens.
Yeah, I'm a little anxious.
When are you supposed to come back?
The 12th.
The 12th. That's the day that the final hearing is.
I know.
Wow.
I'm sweating. I don't know if everybody can hear my heart beating a mile a minute. I'm very anxious. I'm going with a family of Iranian Americans.
Yeah.
To my brother's wedding in China. And I want to go. I want to be there for him.
Yeah.
I'm officiating.
Yeah, I don't think you have a choice with the officiating.
And I'm just really anxious about the way back.
Yeah.
Because also, like, whatever happens, I'm scared because he's saying that it's going to be bigger and badder and cover more countries and do, like, you know, even more restrictions.
Right. Yeah, what you're mentioning is actually the 90-day. So up until this past weekend, it is the weekend of September 24th, we've been experiencing a 90-day somewhat of a moratorium where we weren't allowed to, the Supreme Court had said, like, we're going to have this kind of thing for 90 days. So what Trump is saying now is he's going to try to add countries and put all these different things in place. But we as community organizations don't know what that is yet. And so we're just kind of waiting. But what I did confirm is that whatever the Supreme Court hears on the 10th is basically whatever the latest iteration is.
We're all citizens.
Right.
But I don't think it has anything to do with it.
Yeah, I think, like, technically, as all citizens, you'll be fine to come back into this country. But I think as Iranian Americans, they're going to make it very difficult. So depending on which airport it is or depending on who's the custom agent, you know, in charge at the time, you know, like, so there's, like, so many variables possible here.
I also love our timing with things because, like, when we were in the middle of the nuclear back and forth, the nuclear alpha-ing, as though you even need to, between Kim Jong and Trump, we were, like, flying into Hawaii.
Oh, yeah.
And now with this new iteration, plus more heightened tensions in the nuclear, like, what is this, the new Cold War?
New Cold War. Yeah, that's exactly what this is.
We're flying into Shanghai.
Yeah.
Which is closer to North Korea.
Yeah, but I don't think North Korea cares about Trump, not China.
This is not a foreign policy podcast, folks. It's about the extent of information we have. It's for both of us to be like, yeah, I don't know.
We might get, where's our bunker?
Yeah, exactly. Or my mental safe space. Okay, speaking of mental safe spaces.
Yeah.
Like Hollywood.
Is your mental safe space?
It's like blossoming a little bit.
Oh my gosh, I was so excited to watch the Emmys. I usually don't watch the Emmys because I don't like to watch white people get awards. But hey, that didn't happen this time because Childish Gambino got an award. Childish Gambino is Donald Glover. He got an award for Atlanta. And then Aziz and Lena got an award for that Thanksgiving episode on Master of None.
Oh, amazing.
And then Dave Chappelle got an award for his guest appearance on SNL. And then Riz Ahmed, he got an award for acting in Night Of, which is amazing. And then his speech was so amazing.
Wow. I got to shout out Oprah as well because I'm lucky enough to be sat next to her. But thank you so much for this. This is a tremendous honor just to be recognized alongside so many inspiring actors who I've watched for so long, not least John Turturro. It's been amazing getting to watch you up close. And I share this with you, brother. It's been amazing going on this ride with you. I'm indebted to many people, not least of all Steve Zaillian. Thank you for your genius, your uncompromising vision, Thank you to Richard Price for your quick wit and your sharp pen. Thank you to our amazing producers for never giving up on this. It's been a crazy long ride. Scott Ferguson, Jane Tranter, Garrett Bash, all the team at HBO. And one of our executive producers, sadly, isn't with us anymore. But he's a man who I believe single-handedly changed television, and I hope he's proud of us right now. And that's the late, great James Gandolfini. Just before I go, I want to say it's always strange reaping the rewards of a story that's based on real-world suffering. But if this show has shone a light on some of the prejudice in our society, Islamophobia, some of the injustice in our justice system, then maybe that's something. And I'll shout out South Asian Youth Action for helping me prepare for this and the Innocence Project. Thank you very much.
Oh my gosh, wasn't that speech amazing?
I think you just really like the shout outs.
I think here's the thing that I loved about it. I love that he definitely loved he shouted out an organization that I've worked with in the past, SIA, South Asian Youth Action.
An Innocence Project.
And I mean, like, no one else that whole night shouted out any, you know, gave credit to anyone else like that. And then I just love that he, in some way, he acknowledges how problematic it is to be this character, which is so wrapped up in Islamophobia. And he was like, well, if I brought some light to it, then maybe I'll make a difference. You know, I thought that was kind of cool. I mean, I've seen Riz in so many things, and he always plays different iterations of a terrorist, which is funny because he has this article where he says that he tries to stay away from terrorist roles. I'm just like, no, actually, you have a career out of this. He just ends up picking terrorist roles who have a little bit more complexity to them versus the two-faced versions. Anyways, I just think that him acknowledging it at the Emmys was pretty powerful.
This is so interesting to me because when you had mentioned in our preparation for this episode that Riz had won, I watched the episode of him in Lena Dunham's show, Girls, because I thought that's what it was for.
Oh, really?
I thought that he had received a nod for an appearance.
Oh, God, no.
I didn't know.
You think Girls would get an Emmy nomination?
I didn't know it was as a lead. I think I blocked it out because I really hated The Night Of.
Yeah, you did.
And I hated that character. And it makes me think of the controversy and struggle and pain of Denzel Washington winning the Oscar for Training Day.
Yeah.
And not all of the other roles.
Totally.
That he could have won it for. You know, like, that's how I feel about this.
Right. No, I see that.
And I appreciate the fine line that he's walking.
Yeah. And I think he kind of addressed that complexity in his acceptance speech, which was kind of cool. Like, he didn't go up there and say, like, yeah, I won an award. Congrats to stories about me. You know, like, it was...
Well, and he also didn't go the full mile saying, like, as a Muslim or for Muslim Americans, this is a difficult time. He didn't say that either. Which just made me think, like, I guess you can't do that.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a limitation.
And I love how he handled it in the moment. I thought he did a good job. And I'm proud of him. First Muslim. But he's not the first Muslim.
He's not the first Muslim. There are three Muslim wins.
Dave
Chappelle.
Yeah.
Aziz Ansari.
Yep.
And Riz Ahmed.
I know.
I will to add, Aziz does not self-identify.
Doesn't self-identify.
As Muslim. We see you.
Yeah.
Even though you're Muslim.
Muslimish. Muslim adjacent. There was a lot of articles that came out right after saying, like, oh, first Muslim. But we're like, I don't actually think that's true. But I did some research and I actually couldn't figure. I actually do think Riz might be the first Muslim actor. But there's definitely a lot of other Muslims that have got Emmys for other things. So there was an Iranian actress that won in 2009.
Shohreh Akhdash, she also was another who identifies as being culturally Muslim.
Mm-hmm. And then there's all these, like, the Emmys have a foreign film section, a documentary section. So there's all these Muslim winners in that field. And then Rami Malek, he got that show iRobot got an Emmy win. And I think one of the writers on that is Muslim too. So, I mean, there's definitely Muslim-ish folks who are winning awards. But this one, I honestly think might be the first male Muslim win.
Hmm.
Yassine Bey got nominated. Mos Def got nominated in 2004. It's silly to have to come up with the first Muslim thing too, but I think that's just everyone's natural inclination is to say first Muslim.
The first.
You've been seeing a lot of that in the media. Congrats, Riz. I just have to say that Good Muslim, Bad Muslim gave Riz Ahmed a Good Muslim Award before that he got the Emmy Award.
Oh, yeah.
We're way ahead of the curve. You know, just saying. We're good predictors.
What's your feeling on the whole, the Muslimish experience, Taz?
I like saying the word Muslimish. Is that what you're asking? What are you asking?
Well, it sort of like answers my question in another direction. Well, okay, because right now, like, is the time of the Rohingya genocide that's happening.
Yeah.
Rohingya Muslims.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also a time where I feel like it's important to acknowledge Muslim identity,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of like what I felt Aziz Ansari doing with his bacon episode.
Yeah.
Was like, you know, he could have not addressed his Islamic upbringing, but he did, like,
yeah.
bring it in, weave it in.
I also think there's the self-identifying as Muslim, but then there's this idea of being in a racialized society where being a Muslim is projected on all brown people. And I think when I say Muslimish, I'm also including Sikh Americans, brown Hindu Americans, people who are misidentified as Muslim. And I think that's also, like, in my definition of Muslimish, that's also what I'm incorporating, is this whole idea of people who have to live as brown people in a racialized society and are mistaken as Muslim because racists don't give a fuck.
Right. And for me, the other piece of it is it feels like a time where no matter what your upbringing, if it was at all Muslim adjacent.
Yeah.
Or Muslimish.
Yeah.
Or the misidentification happened somehow and it affected you. Islamophobia affects everybody right now. And I need to hear people.
Oh, yeah,
support.
Absolutely. Absolutely. When I say Muslimish, that's what that means to me, is that it incorporates all of that. Because I just think that in this society of layered racism, you can't shed it unless you're
Yeah. And a yes, no doesn't answer it.
No. Yeah. So while we're celebrating the Emmys in the U.S., well, there's a lot of other terrible things going on in this world, including hurricanes, Trump.
Earthquakes.
Oh, my gosh. 8.1 in Mexico.
8.1 and then a 7 and then a 6.
I can't even imagine how big that must be.
My Lyft driver was like full on conspiracy.
With earthquakes?
Yeah. He was like, I think it was a bomb is what he said.
Oh, it didn't look like it, though. And then in Myanmar, otherwise known as Burma, there's also travesty happening.
Genocide. The Rohingya Muslims are, their villages were being set on fire. They're being shot, and they had to flee. And a lot of them have fled to Bangladesh.
Mm-hmm.
There was like this weird fake news thing that happened where there were these people who were not Rohingya Muslims, but who were posing as them.
That's
on
ridiculous.
Camera, setting fire to their homes to say that the Rohingya Muslims were doing it to themselves.
That's terrible.
And then there was a satellite photo taken where you can see the massacre.
It's so tragic.
Of it. It's so tragic. And so many have fled. Over 400,000 now have fled to Bangladesh that is housing them. And the prime minister was asked why she didn't ask Trump for help.
Prime minister of Burma?
Of Bangladesh.
Didn't ask for help from Trump?
Right.
First of all, she's a woman, so Trump's not going to listen to her.
I mean, that's not like, yeah. Okay, on the list. In the interview that she gave, there was the most awesome eye roll of all time to that question.
Yeah.
If you could do an eye roll that was like the moon orbiting around Pluto and then back to Earth again.
Very interesting analogy there.
She said, you know, he... Actually, can we insert her response here?
But what he will do or what America will do? Already America declared that they will not allow any refugee in Middle East, Gulf country, and many areas. He already declared his mind. We know how his mind. So why I should ask? If he does not feel that these people are distressed people, they are living in disarray, they need assistance. If he doesn't feel, then I cannot ask any assistance. Well,
to paraphrase, she basically was like, you know, I don't think he cares about Muslims. He's made that clear.
Yeah.
And I know he's not going to listen to me.
Yep.
He's made that clear.
Yep.
So
that's really funny.
I don't know why anyone's asking me why I would ask him. Yeah. Because I feel like it's clear.
It's pretty clear.
And that Bangladesh is supporting refugees.
Yeah, Bangladesh has always been one of the poorest countries in the world. It's overpopulated, under-resourced. There's nothing there. And they're collecting, basically, it's 500,000 people that have gone to Bangladesh, which is, I mean, it's not surprising because they are opening up their borders to fellow Muslims, which makes sense to me. But it is surprising that nations with more money, tons more resources aren't opening up their doors for this. And then the thing that really shocked me in reading the news article was that Myanmar's army chief justified the slaughter as, quote, unfinished business. And it's just, that's just systematic. That is a systematic genocide. That is the killing of people to annihilate them. They're not killing them in a war. They're just saying like, oh, we don't need these people in our country anymore, which is terrible. And not enough of our media is talking about it. So we need to mention this, that this is something that is happening. We need to shine some light here.
It really worries me that we in general don't have, as a global system, a way of receiving refugees, because that is going to be the number one issue because of climate change.
Yeah. And that's what the Muslim ban is, right? The Muslim ban is a they're calling it a refugee ban. And we're just going to be adding more countries to it. There's refugees coming from everywhere. They're coming from Syria. They're coming from Myanmar. They're coming from
Guatemala, Dominican Republic, Puerto Rico.
Yeah. Now they're going to be coming from the places affected by hurricanes. You know, people are on the move because of climate and because of earthquakes and because of terrible people, and we need a global solution for this.
So what's the deal, UN? Maybe get on that.
Get on it. But don't listen to Trump. Whatever Trump says, he's not speaking on behalf of American people.
Ugh. I can't even imagine what we look like to the rest of the world right now.
I know, and I hate getting into conversations with my family overseas.
Whoa, what's that like?
They were like, how'd you let him get elected? And I said, I didn't. It was the white people.
It was the white people.
You have an awesome creeping Sharia.
I do. I'm so excited.
Oh my gosh. I love this creeping Sharia.
My friend Jennifer Judges.
My friend too.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
My friend first.
But my friend too.
Our friend, Jennifer Jaje, is in an episode of Transparent.
You might recognize her from her one-person show called I Heart Hamas, which toured a lot in the early 2000s or mid-2000s.
The subtitle to that is awesome. The full name of the show is I Heart Hamas and Other Things I'm Afraid to Tell You.
It's good.
It's a great show. She's Palestinian Christian.
Mm-hmm.
She was on the show Transparent playing a Palestinian activist.
That's amazing.
She came in with one line, ended up in three episodes.
Oh my gosh, I need to watch this.
I was watching it at 1 o'clock in the morning because Transparent is my favorite show. And this entire season, a lot of it takes place in Israel. And I was like,
ugh. Really? They took it to Israel?
Yeah. And my cringe is like, is this going to be Israeli-Palestinian conflict? And then,
Yeah, but if Jennifer's on it, then you know it's going to be right.
Well, so the way it happened was first they mentioned that they're going to Ramallah.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? And I sat straight up in bed. And then I was like, wait, if they don't have Jennifer Jaje and they're going to Ramallah, I'm going to be really angry.
And then you're like, hey, they have her.
Yeah. And also the conversation that they have, that they also hold space for in the episode, is fantastic.
Yeah.
It allows it to be a conversation that's not just this Jewish versus Muslim conversation or who got their first conversation. It really holds space for complexity, which is sort of a creeping complexity.
Yeah.
moment that I'm celebrating here. And it's just that feeling of when you have a show that is your safe haven escape.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then when it does something this awesome.
Yeah.
Then it's like,
you're like, yes. Well, that does it. I have to watch it. I have to catch up.
I love that show.
The secondary creeping Sharia to that, I guess, would be the, Riz on the girls episode, but we already talked about that. Mine creeping Sharia is also a TV-related creeping Sharia. It's that new series called The Bold Type. I've been watching it on Hulu. It's a freeform television show, and there's been billboards around.
What does freeform television mean?
I don't actually know. I think it's a channel. But I watch it on Hulu. And it's this TV show that revolves around three characters who work for like a cosmopolitan magazine type of a website and magazine. And in this series, there is this character who is an Iranian artist who wears hijab, and they kind of profiled her. She's a queer Iranian artist, and they profiled her early on in the series. And then one of the main characters, the social media coordinator, I guess, ends up developing a romance with her. And the Muslim character that is portrayed, her name is Adina El Amin, and she's kind of this like brazen, outwardly proud queer Muslim artist. And it's just been really awesome to watch the series and see how they're portraying this character. I don't know. I think I was telling you this earlier. Like, I was telling you that you wouldn't like those TV shows because it's like very like girly and popcorn and just kind of like a chick lit book on TV. And there's nothing like really deep about it. But I think there's something so awesome about having popcorn, chick litty type stuff that addresses kind of the complex nature of being a queer Muslim artist in hijab, you know, like just how they've been having it roll out has been really interesting.
And she's Iranian.
And I think there's like, there are some things about it which I do find maybe not Muslimy accurate, or there's a lot of pushback after the first show that she's not wearing her hijab, right? But at the same time, I also think there's the way that they're playing it out is kind of cool.
This Nicole Boucheri, who plays Adina on The Bold Type, creeping Sharia on Freeform TV.
Yeah. She'll like wear a hijab, but then show a lot of cleavage and, you know.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah.
I like that.
People are pushing back on that.
I think that's important to me.
Yeah.
In my version of Islam. Zaraism.
Zaraisms.
Because I think it's symbolic.
Yes. There's a lot of like girly symbolism in this TV show.
Did you just say girly symbolism?
Mm-hmm.
Is that like bad feminist lingo?
No, I think I would say girly is also the same as like high femme.
Is it a reclamation?
Maybe. Maybe what? It's a reclamation.
What's high femme? I don't
know. High femme is just like wearing like bright red lips, just being super feminine. It's the opposite of butch. I don't know.
Oh.
Just like super girly. I'm reclaiming girly, and I'm also reclaiming high femme.
I also feel like you're getting queer newsletters that I'm missing out on.
Probably am.
You need to catch up.
You do need to catch up. Fatwas.
Fatwa time. Dun, dun, dun,
dun, dun. I got a spider bite after we got back from Hawaii.
Okay.
So I was at my dad's house, and we live in the Inland Empire, so it's kind of deserty, and there's all these spiders. And I woke up, and I had 6 spider bites on my chest.
6?
Yeah, they were like right here. And this was right after we got back from Hawaii. So I knew what to look for to make sure it didn't get infected. And then...
because I nearly lost an arm.
Yeah. And so then I was like, well, okay, there isn't multiple circles. Mm. It's not growing. It's just really itchy.
Are people taking notes on this? Take note.
And then I called my doctor when my lymph nodes started swelling up.
Ugh.
Then I called her, and then she was like, just go to urgent care. And then I went to urgent care, and the urgent care doctor was like, yeah, that's what happens when you get bites. And I was like,
your lymph nodes swell?
Yeah. And he's like, touched it, and he's like, oh, that's just normal. And I was like, but it feels so big. He's like, oh, usually when people have swollen lymph nodes, it's like big and bulbous, and there's pus, and like it's like bleeding. And pus.
But I like pus better.
Pus. And he was just like, oh, yeah, you're fine. It'll just go away. So.
Huh.
I think he was the cousin of your doctor, is what that sounded like. I think they went to the same med school.
Later, did you have to like draw a marker on it because it like spread, and then he was like, oh, who drew marker on you?
He would have said that, but he didn't.
6!
6. And then the funny thing was like, you know, it's on my left breast. So he's like, so where's your spider bite? I'm just like, here. And I'm just like, this is like so inappropriate. And then he was just like, he was trying to look at it, but he was trying not to look at it. And I was just like, oh my gosh, this is terrible. He was very professional. But I was like, yeah, it's really hot. And then he like touched it. And then he's like, then he touched the other side. And he's like, well, yes, it is as hot as the rest of your skin is. And I was just like, that's not helpful information. I was like, I feel very dismissed how you said that. As hot as the rest of your... Anyway, so that's my fatwa is still on spiders. Okay, my secondary fatwa is all these makeup brands that don't cater to brown women.
Oh, that's a good fatwa.
because I have been obsessed over Fenty, which is Rihanna's line of cosmetic that just came out. And I've been watching all the brown and black beauty vloggers out there and watching their review of the product. And then I went to Sephora and gave Fenty all my money.
Nice.
Yeah. And for people who don't follow makeup, Fenty just came out with a line of foundation. She has 40 different colors, which most makeup usually has 10. And for the darker shades, it's like tan and dark. There's like only two shades. But she's catering to all kinds of women of color and lighter women, too. You know, like she's 40 different shades. And finally, women of color are being heard and being seen. I guess that's the more relevant word. And the color that I am, when I went to go buy it at Sephora, they were sold out. The shade of tan that I am is sold out. A lot of the darker colors are sold out. So I had to buy it online.
Okay, so in the spirit of women being seen and heard and fatwa-ness, I would like to just put out a wide request. Send me the 30-something makeup blogger that is doing contouring tutorials for women with olive skin tones, there's a green undertone, okay, with freckles.
There you go.
What the hell am I supposed to do, folks?
You know what? I'm going to fatwa or do a call out during this fatwa. I'm going to do a call out to all the makeup brands that are out there that are trying to win over brown-skinned women or brown-skinned makeup wearers and send the products to me. I'll test it out.
There you go.
I might do a review here.
I also will test out cash.
Yeah, cash is good.
Yeah, if you send me cash, I'll test out how to spend it. Just like spending.
Diamonds? I like diamonds.
I'll test out. No blood diamonds, can't.
No blood diamonds. I'll do the other kinds of diamonds.
I can't support the diamond industry.
Any kind of diamonds?
No, I'm not allowed.
Any kind of jewels?
No. My husband has his own atheist fatwa against diamonds.
All kinds of diamonds.
Yeah, because he says that it like feeds into the whole
what about gold?
Branding. I'm into gold.
Yeah, you'll do gold?
Yeah.
All right, there you go.
All right, gold. Okay, it's awkward. Ask a Muslim time.
Yes.
Mine is so awkward that it just makes me awkward just talking about it.
I
know,
I can see your acid reflux going up your throat right now.
Yeah. My skin's starting to thin out there.
That's a foundation recommendation for you.
We're also naked while we're recording this.
Yeah.
Okay, at work, I got into an argument with this guy at work.
Yeah.
And his solution has been to just pretend like I don't exist.
Which is stupid because you can't work with someone like that.
And also feels really awful.
Yeah.
Like he doesn't make eye contact with me on purpose. Like he looks away immediately. If he's laughing, he's in a room. I walk in, he stops and leaves the room sometimes. Sometimes he'll just come in and just like talk to people like I'm not there. Like I don't exist. Like I'm a ghost.
Okay.
And here's the awkward ask a Muslim part of it is like, on September 11th, I was really not looking forward to going into this work environment.
Right.
And I was just like, well, maybe because it's September 11th, then it's be a friend day. Like, be nice to each other day.
Yeah. Not even just be a friend, just be nice. It's a bad day.
It's a bad day. It's a hard day. And I don't know why I had made this assumption that that would be in his subconscious as well, even though he's not Muslim, Muslimish, nothing to do.
You know, we talked about this, that like it's a hard day for all kinds of people. You don't have to be Muslim. Like everyone should understand this is a bad day just for America.
But I feel like you should be nice to people.
You should be nice.
Yeah, or just mindful of the fact that anything minor on a day like that just like doubles down on trauma.
Totally, totally.
And so I just like my awkward ask is, like, on September 11th, folks, let's have it be, let's be nice day.
Yeah. Your awkward ask is the awkward silence. There was no actual questions asked. It was just uncomfortableness on September 11th.
And also, like, let's not purposefully try to make Zara feel invisible.
Yeah.
On this day. That's hurtful.
Yeah. And anyone on that day.
I mean, just separate from the awkward ask, why can't men just be better, you know?
I don't know. That's my question to everyone I've been messaging on
online. Like, you have an emotion, and then you have a meltdown. It's an emotion. Deal with your emotion. Did you feel vulnerable? Did you feel stupid? Did you feel weak? I don't know. I don't know what you're feeling, because you're not telling me. Just tell me. I can take it. Good God. I can't deal.
Yeah. My awkward ask actually happened in Shangri-La. It happened right after the show. And the thing is that, like, after we recorded. I totally forgot that this had happened. Like, even in the moment, I had forgotten it had happened until I read an article by Michael Harriet. I think it was on The Roots. And it was a piece about having to placate white people. And I totally forgot that this was a microaggression I had experienced. But right after we walked off the stage and then there was a reception, this white woman came up to me and said, you know, when you say white people, just, it's not all white people. And this was an episode where we were talking about Nazis, you know, and she was saying that I need to be careful not to offend. And I was just really dismissive. I was like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And didn't really think about it because we had just done our live show. We owned the power in that thing. She was in the audience. We were invited to speak at a museum. We were being paid for this.
We have some level of authority here, yes.
We were at a reception where we were being honored.
Yes.
You know, these people were our guests at this event. And she had the gall to come up to me and correct me. And I was like,
What did she correct you on?
That not all white women, not all white people, you know? And I think the thing about that microaggression was that we experience that all the time, right? We experience these kinds of white people coming up to us and telling us how to behave and telling us how we're allowed to behave. But what really upset me was that I had forgotten that it had happened, you know, like the fact that it had happened. And I had totally forgotten until I was triggered by this article. And I was like, oh my gosh, like I was really upset by it. I was like genuinely upset that I had forgotten that I had experienced this. And I don't know, that was
Isn't that funny how it happens?
It's so funny how it happens. In that, I think this same woman was in the bathroom with a friend of ours at the after show. So our friend was in the bathroom and she overheard this conversation and where the same woman was casually but loudly saying to her friend about, quote, facts and how she wasn't sure that our podcast was a good news source. And then our friend interjected and said that wasn't the point of the podcast. Our podcast is about two women just having a conversation.
Yeah, this is not true. A news
this
source.
Isn't a news source.
This is us talking about news that we're interested in.
Exactly. And if, you know, if you don't want to hear perspectives of women, then this is probably not the...
This is also not the place for you to, like, receive your news for the first time and only time.
Definitely don't receive your news here. We're just talking about things that are in the news. And just
that we already read.
Yeah.
Sorry. I got sidetracked and totally annoyed.
Yes. This is our mutual annoyance here. Is people who, I don't know, Shirella was weird.
She really said not all white people?
Mm-hmm. After Nazis.
Oh my God. Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Like you have to come up after a discussion about Nazis and say not all.
Be careful not to offend. That was a direct quote. Be careful not to offend
the people who are not Nazis.
Well, not Nazis. That wasn't what she said. But be careful not to offend white people.
Yeah. But that's what she's saying.
Basically.
That's interesting. if there were more people around from during the Holocaust...
Yeah.
We could ask them, how did politeness go?
So dark.
I'm just curious. Hmm. You know, how did you treat each other? How were manners dealt with?
Yeah, and we can do that with the Japanese Americans too, right? Like, how was it to be nice?
Yeah.
Everyone.
Just be kind to, because not all oppressors are oppressive.
Guys, when we say white people, we don't mean all white people. We mean white systems of oppression. We mean, oh my gosh, I don't even want to have to.
But right now I'm so angry.
I know, that's what I felt. I felt so angry that we had that reception. We had at least 4 or 5 microaggressions. I just forgot to tell you about this. Like, we were dealing with the woman who talked about wearing hijab. And then I was talking about the other woman that was, like, dealing with her adoptee daughter. Like, there were so many multiple microaggressions going on that I just forgot about this. I was so upset that I had forgotten about this experience.
The thing that's also funny to me about that is that she's coming to you saying, you know, you shouldn't be presenting yourself as a singular source of journalism. But, like, actually, it sounds like she really needs multiple sources.
Oh, she definitely needs a lot.
Of, quote, unquote, diversity.
Yeah, I hope she's listening to this.
If you're listening to this, you need to read more.
Read more. Listen to all of our podcasts. And just as an aside, I do want to talk about Ta-Nehisi Coates wrote an awesome piece on whiteness in The Atlantic. Go read that, too.
I was waiting for one of us to pull that.
Yeah. I don't have...
Here, read this.
I don't have more feedback on that, but it was a really well-crafted article. I listened to the audio. Go listen to that.
Yes.
Okay, let's get to something a little bit more happy. Let's talk about Good Muslim Awards. Who do you have a Good Muslim Award to give to?
Okay, I know I talk about Zayn Malik a lot.
I talk about Zayn Malik a lot.
But this isn't Zayn Malik. This is a good Muslim award for Zayn Malik's granddad.
Aw.
Yeah.
Some grandfather love.
Because he taught him how to read.
Aw.
And I want to give a good Muslim award to Zayn Malik's granddad for giving Zayn lessons on reading.
That's awesome.
Has nothing to do with Zayn being a superstar.
Nope.
Has nothing to do with him being ridiculously attractive.
Nope.
Has nothing to do with how much time I spend looking at his face on Twitter.
No.
This is just about his granddad teaching him how to read, and I appreciate that his granddad took that time. All granddads should do that, and that's what this is about. This has nothing to do with how much I rub off to Zayn. Taz, and I don't appreciate
rub off to Zayn.
You're suggesting.
Did you say rub off?
That this is what that's about.
Well, my Good Muslim Award is going to go to the folks at The Tiger Hunter, which is this new movie that just came out this weekend. I particularly want to give the award to Lena Khan, who is this dope Muslim woman who wears a hijab, even though I don't like talking about hijab, but like she does wear a hijab, and I think there's just something kind of cool about it. And she produced and wrote this movie.
Directed it.
All of our friends are in it. Danny Pudi is not my friend, but he could be my friend. Danny, get at me. Parvesh is in it. Rizwan Manji's in it. You know, just like folks that we know in the South Asian and Muslim acting scene in LA. It's a great movie. I watched it. I loved it. It's about this character who comes from India to pursue an engineering degree. It takes place in the 1970s wave of immigration that happened. And there's a love story in it where he's in love with a girl back home and he's trying to figure out how to make himself better to bring her over. And it's just kind of cute and awesome. And yeah, there's a lot of things I like about it. I did get a chance to interview the cast and crew for 18 Million Rising. So just Google that. It's on YouTube. I had a really fun conversation. Have you seen it yet?
No, I'm excited to see it.
Go watch it. Go watch it if you can. It's an adorable movie.
Where is it playing?
It's playing limited release, so they're really hoping that people show up and put their money into this so that they can keep it going for a little bit
limited
longer.
Release in LA, New York, I'm guessing.
It's limited release in a lot of cities. Okay. I think in a lot of the major cities. But you can go to thetigerhunter.com to see if it's playing where it's playing near you.
I'm so excited that this is out. I'm a Kickstarter backer.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, then you definitely have to watch it. Yeah, and you have to watch my interview with the cast and crew. It was a lot of fun.
Which is on YouTube.
The thing that I mentioned on the conversation that I had with them that I want to mention here is that one of the things that I did love about the movie was it was a Muslim movie without it being a Muslim movie.
Hmm.
So there was nothing explicit about the characters being Muslim, but there was a prayer rug in the back and there was like one, they mentioned Allah once in the movie. And when he's leaving India, he says Qadhafis. So there's all these like signals, but there's no like explicit like azan and praying and none of those kinds of visuals. And I think that's kind of awesome. And then in the conversation with Lena, she talks about why she did that. I was really happy that she was so deliberate in how she expressed her Muslimness.
Oh, I'm really excited to see this interview.
Yeah, it was a fun conversation. So we'll have it up on our site. And that's my award. Go check out that movie.
That brings us to the close of our podcast. What are you doing, Tess?
Well, if you want to know what I am doing, you can check out my website, which I just finished. I think I've been talking about it. TazzyStar.me. I will be speaking at the Work It Podcast Festival in Los Angeles on October 3rd.
I'm so sad to miss that.
I'm so sad that you're going to miss it, too. I am in a book called 6 Words Fresh Off the Boat. It's like a collection of 6-word memoirs. So I'll be doing a book reading for that on October 7th. And I'll be at a poetry conference called Thinking Its Presence in Tucson on October 20th. What about you?
I am performing at the Moth.
What?
At the Hearst Theater on the 28th. I don't know if the podcast will come out before then, but if it does, San Francisco, check it out. It's an 800-seat theater. I'm so excited. It's I love the Moth.
Right around the corner.
I can't wait.
It's going to be exciting.
And when I get back from China, inshallah, without issue, I am going to be performing at the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts with none other than Jill Soloway.
Oh my goodness.
Showrunner, creator, writer, director, of my favorite show, Transparent.
Awesome.
I'm really excited about that.
Awesome. So y'all can follow us in California.
Sorry. You think she'll read my pilot?
Hand it to Jennifer Jaje.
Jennifer, help me out.
Thanks for listening. Be safe out there. It's a wild world.
And we love you.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Good Muslim, Bad Muslim podcast, hosted by Taz Ahmed and Zara Nurbash. You can follow Taz on Twitter at TazzyStar, that's TAZZYSTAR, and Zara at Zara Comedy, that's ZAHRA Comedy. The show is produced and edited by Quincy Sarasmith, and you can find us on the web at goodmuslimbadmuslim.com. To follow the conversation, please use the hashtag GoodMuslimBadMuslim. Good Muslim, Bad Muslim is a proud member of Potluck, a collective that features stories and voices from the Asian American community.
Holy Potluck. Potluck.
They were like, how'd you let him get elected? And I said, I didn't. It was the white people.
It was the white people.